Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on September 26th, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and we have been voted best local radio show on the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. And the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help their businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the city of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit their website at www.manhattanbeachchamber.com, that's all, manhattanbeachchamber.com, or call 310-545-5313. That's 310-545-5313. You can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show, or visit us on our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with SouthBayByJackie.com and producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm well this morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great. I feel all excited because, as we've talked often, Jackie, there is nothing more local than real estate.
That's right.
And we're going to have a great show today. Who are our guests today?
Our guests this morning are James O'Callaghan, President and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce, and David Kissinger, Director of Government Affairs at the South Bay Association of Realtors. James O'Callaghan comes to Manhattan Beach from Venice Visitor, Venice's first destination marketing organization, at which he served as executive director. Previously, he served as director of visitor services for LA Inc. and the Los Angeles Convention and Visitors Bureau. As chamber president and CEO, James guides and oversees the board of directors, which is comprised of business leaders throughout the South Bay, as well as the chamber's 19 committees, which include special events, business development programs, and more. James holds a Bachelor of Science degree from Hofstra University and a Master's of Education from Columbia University. David Kissinger is the Director of Government Affairs at the South Bay Association of Realtors. He advocates on behalf of realtors in the South Bay between LAX and the Port of Los Angeles. David has a long-standing interest in urban planning and smart growth, and he is drawn to walkable, sustainable, mixed-use communities. Previously, he was an aide to a Los Angeles City Council member, a public relations specialist, and freelance journalist. He continues to advocate, write, blog, and speak publicly on topics such as urban planning, governments, housing, the economy, and cultural and social issues. This morning, we're going to be talking about, as you mentioned, one of our favorite subjects, real estate. In particular, what's in Manhattan Beach. James, David, welcome to the program. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. And we often talk about the wonderful market that is here. I think James is certainly familiar with this phrase, and I hope I get it right. A controller or one of the people in the finance department in Manhattan Beach coined this phrase: if it's terrible out there, it's good in Manhattan Beach. If it's good out there, it's great here. David, do you agree with that phrase?
I actually do. I think Manhattan Beach is a terrific town. There's a lot of stuff going to it. It's in its favor. I mean, you have – just look at the downtown core starting there. You can almost think of the downtown area along Manhattan Beach Boulevard as two anchors, similar to malls. So one anchor is Metlox Plaza, and you have this wonderful, delightful street walking down. The other anchor is the entire Pacific Ocean. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And, I mean, you can look out your window today. It's a gorgeous day. There's no fog. You know, it's the end of summer. It's hot. It's so even though kids are in school, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's very family-friendly. It's very kid-friendly. It's not cheap, if you like, but, you know, this is Los Angeles and this is Southern California. So you're right. I do agree with you. I think there's a lot of great stuff going on in Manhattan Beach.
So those of us who live in the South Bay, are often, you know, consumed with the prices going up and down and inventory, available and not available and rentals and all that. Can you give us an overview, really, of what's going on in the market today? And then I know that James O'Callaghan had mentioned that we're going to be talking a lot about zoning and what's going on in the downtown. But give us an overview. What's going on, David?
You know, real estate in Manhattan Beach is different. It really is pricey. So we actually have, and I'm very grateful that we do have a relationship with the Daily Breeze, on every Saturday in the home section. Mm. Like the real estate section publishes statistics that we take from our multiple listing service. And this is just based on transactions that are done by realtors and they're tracked inside our MLS database. They're available to the public to some degree, by the way, on realtor.com. But I'll give you some examples. So last week, during the week of September 14th, we reported the median home price in Manhattan Beach was $1.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that is only based on 6 transactions. I mean, these are not statistically solid numbers, but, you know, the median home price, just on a weekly basis for the last couple of years now, has almost always been over $1 million. And that is significant only because in much of the rest of the South Bay, for example, in that same week, the median home price in Torrance was $550,000, and these just I'm rounding, $500,000 in Hawthorne, in Gardena $369,000, in El Segundo $509,000. I'll give you one more example: Hermosa Beach, $1.3 million. So another outlier, another kind of bump. You know, there is a draw to the beach and to coastal communities. At some point, if we get in this conversation, there is a way that I've been noticing in coastal communities, at least in California, where they're built differently, they're planted differently than in somewhere that's a little bit further inland. I think you see that in Hermosa Beach and Manhattan Beach, where you have something like that downtown strip along Manhattan Beach Boulevard, where you can walk. You can walk from your home, you know. I guess in my bio, I'm drawn to the idea of you can get up in the morning, walk, get some coffee, walk, get a gallon of milk, get some cereal, walk over, get your dry cleaning, and walk back home again. Mm. I think that's terrific. It's very hard to do these days. You can do that, at least in the coastal area, and you see by the prices there that there is a lot of demand for that kind of living condition.
So lifestyle, that's what you're saying that is really driving the market, and that's wonderful, but also it's planning, right? We're in this process of planning. James, we are, Manhattan Beach in particular, is in this season of planning, as, you know, all of the major sales operations, malls, and are in renovation now around the South Bay, but the cities are in these major planning modes. Tell us a little bit, James, about what the Chamber is doing and what the city is doing to plan for the future.
I'll start with what the city is trying to do. A couple of months, years ago, we all started talking about, you know, the right mix of businesses, the price of rentals downtown. And, you know, it started really with, like, Magpie leaving and the chain, the individual stores that people had come to know and love in Manhattan Beach.
Mm.
And through that, it came to people's attention that weren't really paying any attention, that rents had gotten up into a double digit per square foot. When you're paying $10, $11 a square foot for a lease, that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It started saying, well, 10 individual businesses compete here. Do we need more restaurants? Do we need less real estate? Do you need less doctor's offices? Do you need less retail stores? What is the mix that's going to draw people here? So over the last couple of months, we've worked pretty closely with the city to help start designing a plan to get everybody's voice heard. And that's really where the chambers come in and tried to work with all the different groups rather than, you know, in the past, the chamber was probably seen solely as the business advocate, but we want to make sure that the right mix is there for the community, for the businesses, for other types of businesses that we haven't even thought of today. So it's just getting the landowners to talk together, getting the shop owners to talk together, getting potential, you know, business partners to talk together, and getting the city to the table with all of these people at the same time. So.
I hate to keep bouncing around, but David, I want to get this out there as well. You're with the South Bay Association of Realtors, and we don't often get to talk to the South Bay Association of Realtors. We talk to realtors here and there, but the Association of Realtors isn't specifically trying to sell me a home or to sell my home. Tell us about the South Bay Association of Realtors.
Right. Well, first of all, thank you again, by the way, for the invitation this morning. I'm delighted to be here. And,
thank you.
We're always a phone call away. And so I guess my point of that is you're right. We do not sell real estate. I personally do not have a real estate license, and I don't buy and sell. I don't get involved in individual transactions. In fact, if I were to be involved in a transaction, it would be a conflict of interest for me, so I stay away from those.
Hmm.
What we do is, as a trade association, we represent licensed real estate agents. Now, if you want, the word realtor is a registered trademark. It's held by the National Association of Realtors, which is the United States' largest nonpartisan trade association. We do make a big deal that we're nonpartisan, but in any event, to call yourself a realtor is not just a licensed real estate agent. There are other things. For example, there is a very strict code of ethics that we enforce very strictly, and we also provide advocacy. We provide training. We provide legal support. You know, we provide a number of different things. We provide access to the multiple listing service, and all this kind of helps come together to help a realtor do his or her job.
Hmm.
So where I come from is at the South Bay Associations. I work on behalf of the realtors in the South Bay, which includes everywhere from El Segundo down to San Pedro in the Port of L.A. My world is not including Palos Verdes and Inglewood. We're kind of sandwiched between there. So we're kind of a jigsaw puzzle of local associations all over the state. And then we work with our state and national boards as well. Here's a little fun fact, by the way. So in the South Bay, there are a little bit more than 3,800 realtors in our world, in the South Bay, not including PV and Inglewood. Of those 3,800, 975 are registered with a broker in Manhattan Beach. So what does that mean? It means one out of every four realtors in the South Bay are registered in Manhattan Beach. So think about that. In Manhattan Beach, there's a 4-square-mile area. That's a significant concentration. You know, and I mean, we can go to a bunch of different reasons why,
it's a realtor on every block.
But let me tell you something else, though. That does not mean that every one of the realtors is selling properties, homes, and condos only in Manhattan Beach.
Hmm.
Right? You go where there is business. Some of them are selling properties around the world. Some are just up and down California. Some elsewhere in. Elsewhere in just the South Bay. So, but for whatever reason, there is a job. Maybe there's a cachet to the name Manhattan Beach. I don't know, but this is just the way our numbers that we've seen lately have laid out there. So we do work on their behalf. I advocate for realtors. We also help realtors if they're, you know, as they reach the public. And we also act as a line of communication between realtors and between the public, between our friends at, for example, the Chambers of Commerce and other entities, and also between local governments, all sorts of government agencies. There's the language of governmentese is different than the language of real estate ease. And I've seen in my many years in this business kind of a disconnect, you know, and so we're here to bridge that gap between them.
Right, right. Wonderful. And I love that there is an association of realtors that we can go to get sort of, I would say, the right information, unedited information that isn't, doesn't have an agenda. So James, let's talk about what's going on with the downtown and real estate. What can we do, and what are we doing?
No, I mean, we can all together do pretty much anything we want to do as long as we plan it properly.
Hmm.
The real issue is, what do the residents want Manhattan Beach to be 5, 10, 20 years from now? And I don't know that anybody ever really asked them that before. The city had their ideas of what they wanted. The business owners had their ideas of what they wanted. Property owners definitely had their idea. Hey, we can get more money. We're going to get more money. But nobody really sat down and asked the residents, do you want a pet shop? Do you want, I mean, what types of services do you want to have that you can walk to, as David alluded to earlier? And that was the question that we brought back to the residents. And now there's going to be basically a year-long study on what downtown looks like, what we want to see there, and how do we get from where we are today to where we want to go.
Now, I don't want to step on any of the proverbial third rails of real estate, but there are some hanging out there that we just have to ask the question. And I'm going to address this to you, James. Are we talking about rent control?
I don't think anybody's talking about rent control. There's ways to, and many cities have done this, to properly zone an area. And just by controlling certain uses at times, it controls the rent. You don't actually have to put a law in place saying you can't charge more than this. But if you do a good balanced mix of businesses, yeah, they're still going to, rents will still rise, but they won't rise at the catastrophic rate they have. I mean, we've had businesses just disappear because they can't afford to be there. And the problem with that is as service-based businesses or whatnot take over certain areas, and I'm not saying there should be no ground floor use of service-based businesses, but as they interrupt the natural flow and pattern of a shopping district or a restaurant district, the rents rise because there's less overhead. But on top of that, the other businesses around them suffer, because if you have two or three non-store or restaurant use or retail use in a row, people stop walking that far generally. It's been a long study that's been done for malls, for shopping districts. You need some continuous use of space. So it doesn't have to be every storefront, but it has to be a certain percentage of storefronts for the right mix.
Mm. I spent a lot of years in Hermosa. My children grew up in Hermosa, and I talk with older residents from Hermosa, friends that we've had since our kids were little, and we bemoan some of the key, Either or bookstore comes to mind as one of the places that it was a touchstone of places that I loved when we first moved here in the early 90s, late 80s, and they were moved out for that very reason. The owner of the property wanted to raise the rents to an exorbitant level, and they just had to go. They had to go. So
along those lines, there's something to be considered, whether a business model is actually viable in and of itself.
Hmm.
Just because we love something doesn't mean it can survive on its own.
Right.
We have to be realistic with the internet. Times have changed. I mean, you're going to see certain businesses that you were accustomed to purely be something that you get in the cloud or on the web, not something that you see in a brick and mortar store anymore. So we need to be cognizant of that. But, rising rents are one reason businesses go out, but the second reason is their business model is just not good.
Mm.
You know, it's interesting. I just read in the Easy Reader yesterday about Body Glove and how they, in their store, they used to sell all these different manufacturers' merchandise. Like the Body Gloves, they would sell, Spider, or other brand names.
Mm.
And they were talking about how when the internet and e-commerce, came around, how they were going to be directly competing with the people they were carrying. And, they had to sit down and figure something out, as opposed to just alienating everybody. And they did it. And they did it very successfully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't give you the details on it. It's above my head, but...
Well, that's actually happening in some of our retail stores downtown now. I mean, you have a lot of high-end women's boutiques. We'll start with them. They carry a lot of name-brand goods. you never used to be able to get those online or without going to a high-end store. Now, I mean, you do a Google search for whatever the brand is. I mean, you probably know better than I, Jackie, but you do a search for whatever the brand is, and you have 1,000 options at your disposal to buy it, and probably cheaper than you can buy it at a retail store because most of those online outlets don't have the overhead.
Right.
So, you know, you're right. It's a competition, and it's a matter of how you adjust your business on it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So how can the establishment in the real estate community, and how can realtors in general or the South Bay Association of Realtors give us the guidelines or the data to help with this? David, do you in the association, do you guys look at these trends and compare them with other cities and provide that data to the Manhattan Beach City Council?
We do. I'm glad to provide whatever data that a city council or a government official requests. The data that we have is the stuff that we track inside our MLS, and I often release it on an aggregate level, you know, so we can talk about sales trends, we can talk about, you know, how did a home or a condo sell, you know, what was the price per square foot, how much did it cost, what was the median and average cost, and you can make certain observations about where the economy is going based on that.
Right.
I think maybe to your question on that, what we would do is I would love to provide all sorts of data. You know, I don't know so much that we would give guidelines. I'm careful because for what the city is going to be, the city council is going to be doing, if we assume for a minute that they will proceed with what's called the specific plan, which is kind of a unique urban planning tool, you know, that really depends on a whole lot of stakeholders. I love the word stakeholders, and so stakeholders is going to be residents and businesses. It's going to be property owners. It's going to be people that do business, that have a business in the city but don't necessarily live in the city. It will include realtors. It will include doctors, dentists, bankers. You know, everyone has a stake in that, and I think collectively the stakeholders will decide what's the right way to go. We'll certainly participate in that. Where we won't unilaterally dictate here is what should be happening, because that wouldn't be appropriate or fair. I think it's going to be a conversation among everyone. And that's really how something like this would be successful, is if everyone has a true sense of ownership, like, yeah, that's really cool. I really participate in that. Just having a voice at the table, I think, is its own significant victory for any stakeholder. And so that's the direction that I would envision going with this.
I see. Now, James, I want to ask you to explain something. We were at the, I believe it was called the Economic Forum. Is that right?
Yeah.
Manhattan Beach Economic Forum. And at that forum, we heard from an official from Dana Point, and they talked about how they controlled and managed their uses of their downtown area. Can you talk a little bit about what they found to be successful in their area and how that might relate to Manhattan Beach?
So there's a couple of different models, and I don't know that any one's better than the other, so I'll kind of talk about a couple of them. We had representatives from Dana Point, from Pasadena, and from other cities, and really, we sort of had a different design. Dana Point and Seal Beach were both trying to protect their individual mom-and-pop shops. They were really debating how to zone to restrict use for chain and, you know, larger branded stores. Pasadena focused on, you know, just eliminating service-based businesses from their first floor. Not one of these models is perfect for any one city. And they've all talked about it. You know, they get a good mix of businesses. Do they have a perfect mix? No. You look at Seal Beach compared to Manhattan Beach. If you're a property owner, you'd rather the mix that's in Manhattan Beach right now, because Seal Beach is getting $3, $4, and $5 a square foot, where landlords here are getting $10, $11, and $12 a square foot. So obviously that makes us compromise their ability to drive rent, so on top of other things, access to freeways and whatnot. In Dana Point, they're struggling to recruit tenants there because of the policies they put in place. You know, they're getting better, but they don't have, if you look, they run probably about 30% vacancies, whereas Manhattan Beach is running 5% vacancies.
Mm.
So, you know, you have to look at the policies that are in place and understand how they're affecting each of those numbers. So finding the right mix, there's no easy way to do it. It's going to take a long study. It's going to take really assessing how we got to where we are today. You know, we became, it wasn't overnight, we became extremely popular. People want to come here to dine. They want to come here to shop. They want to come here because they have good schools. They want to buy nice homes. There's reasons people come to visit and stay. And we need to make sure that as we assess what the right mix is, that we take that into account.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is, it's so difficult. It, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Joe, it's not just Manhattan Beach that is going through these growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
It's the entire South Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And what David was talking about, mixed-use, walkable communities. I'm just going to say this because, to me, that's city living.
Mm.
All right, it's city living. If you can walk to your dry cleaner, your local grocery store, rent a movie, whatever. People don't do that anymore. Forget that. it's city living, and as I said, every city in the South Bay is dealing with this. We just recently, it's in Torrance, the new Rock and Brews on PCH and Palos Verdes Boulevard. Boy, oh boy, was there a fight for that not to be allowed to be put there, because right next to it is a mixed-use residential retail development. And the people that live there were screaming about, we don't want this place. It's going to be noisy music. Customers are going to be urinating on our lawns, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But I went to the city council meetings. I went to the planning commission meetings. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, but you bought a condo above a retail store. I mean, you bought that place knowing that it was mixed use. You know, so everybody is going through this.
Mm.
It's going on all over the place. And when you go even further back, you know, when James says about how did we get here, Redondo Beach used to have a thriving downtown in the Marina and Pier area. And I wasn't around in those days, but somebody decided to scrape that and build a bunch of condos. All right? And then and back then, you know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the community reach out to people the way we do now. And now the harbor, the marina, is trying to redevelop. And those people in those condos are furious. it's all very complicated.
It's very complicated, and just before we continue, I want to say, Jackie, coming from the island, and I'm coming from Chicago. You know, we talk sometimes about, you know, in the East or in older cities, L.A. is just like not walkable in some places. In other places, it's very walkable, but obviously the South Bay is getting that reputation for being that special place where you can walk to the beach, walk home, walk to the store, and that used to be my neighborhood. I, you know, and Jackie, I know, has the same, you know, experience from her childhood in our cities, Chicago and Manhattan, New York. Walking was the way you did it. You didn't ever get in a car. Some people never ever owned a car.
Right, right.
Yeah. But here we are in LA, where, you know, the car is king, and now
that's what made suburbia, you know, feasible.
Right.
You know, it's, at some point people decided, oh, instead of living in the city where we have all this stuff at our fingertips, let's move outside the city.
We are having an amazing discussion. We're talking about real estate and development and the future, really, in Manhattan Beach and the South Bay in general. And we're going to continue that discussion, and we're going to have a lot of fun doing it. We're talking with James O'Callaghan, President and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce, and David Kissinger, Director of Government Affairs at the South Bay Association of Realtors. Looking forward to the rest of this discussion. But before we go on, if you have a question or comment, please give us a call at 714-242-5288. This is your radio station, Manhattan Beach 360, on the South Bay Show. And 714-242-5288, we'd love to talk with you. So now, Jackie, we want to thank a sponsor. Who do we want to thank?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And so, James, we are at that unique crossroads where we can look at these models, these different models from other cities. We can have these forums. What is coming up in terms of the kinds of processes and meetings and so forth that people can get involved with so that they can be a part of the dialogue?
Well, October 7th and 21st will be two important dates. October 7th, City Council is going to hear an initiative, which, right or wrong, they're going to hear. It's on a second temporary zoning ordinance, and really what they're looking to do with this ordinance is hear whether or not we should temporarily suspend the ability for chain or formula stores to come into town until they've gone through the whole study. I will tell you there's mixed emotion on both sides. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it's good to restrict any other type of use at this point in time. We've already voted to restrict that no use can change. So if you're a restaurant, you stay a restaurant. If you're an office, you stay an office. So that's on October 7th, just a date to keep in mind. On October 21st, City Council will hear the city staff's recommendation on which consultant to hire to perform a specific plan. And David alluded to a specific plan before. Basically, there's two different types of plans being proposed. One's a specific plan and one's a strategic plan. A specific plan is, and I'll let David know, he's much more versed on this, but a specific plan is basically a legal document that requires the city to do certain things, whereas a strategic plan is a nice wish list and may or may never get implemented. So that's really the layman's term difference between the two. But on the 21st, the city council will vote on which, if either, plan to propose to be done and which firm to hire to do. So we need the residents to come out and talk about that, because after that meeting, we'll start basically a year-long research project where whatever group is hired will go out to town halls to educate people on what the issues are and then do a lot of surveys to get their feedback on what they want to see done.
Right.
So those two dates are pretty important. But I would actually defer to David a little bit, as he's been involved in several of those plans before.
So, David, give us your take on the different kinds of plans that are available to us as we move forward to look at.
Well, Yeah, well, actually, I'll start with a specific plan. I have this sense from what I'm just, you know, obviously I can't predict what the city council will do or say at any time, but I'm getting the sense that's the direction they are leaning. I know there's some questions. It is much more expensive to do the new unit kind of plan, and the difference is that a specific plan is actually, like Jim said, it's a law. It's written into the law. You have to do it this way. There are other plans, like, for example, there's what's called a general plan amendment. A downtown plan, which is also kind of a more of an amorphous thing. It's something that, you know, is defined different ways by different cities, and there are guidelines, and the city will often, you know, require applicants for new businesses, new stores to follow those guidelines, you know, but it's not actually a strict law. So again, under the specific plan, you cannot do what is not allowed under the specific plan, period. It cannot be done. And no judge in the world is going to say otherwise, because that's the way the plan works. And so because of that, the plan actually requires an EIR, lots of public review. And there's lots of precedent for it that are, I think, is something that Manhattan can have a conversation about. Just nearby San Vicente Boulevard in Brentwood, that area is covered by a specific plan. I'll just give you one more example, although there are plenty, but Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, there's a strip also that is covered by a specific plan. And both of those areas, if you can imagine, are they're pedestrian, walkable, retail-y, friendly, fun areas to hang out. I mean, I love to go and hang out there with my kids. And so, you know, that is what it's called for. So the attraction of something else like a downtown plan, the earlier price quotes I've heard of that a downtown plan would probably cost a third of what a specific plan would cost, and that's something that did catch the city council's attention. You know, the city council's coffers are not unlimited, and you know, they do have to allocate their resources properly, and it is something that they're thinking very seriously about. The other thing about a specific plan is that once it's in place, it's very hard to remove, it's very hard to change, and so it's like the Pottery Barn method. You broke it, you got it, you know, it's yours. One more kind of fun example, LAX, Los Angeles International Airport, the master development plan that's been going on over there, that entire airport is now covered by a specific plan, so it can be used in a lot of different contexts. And again, I'm not quite sure which way it's going. I'm just going to guess, I hate to do this, I'm just going to guess that a specific plan is probably the most likely to occur in this scenario.
Because I won't say because, but you believe that might be true, and lots of the specific uses that Manhattan Beach would put their downtown to, they already know what they want.
Right. Well, you know, and it's because of this reason, there is a lot of pressure, a lot of economic pressure on that downtown corridor in general. You know, it's very economically, it is difficult to have sort of your local mom and pop, you know, Fred's hardware store or whatever, for example, when four blocks away, there are homes that are selling for between $4 and $8 million. That does apply that pressure. And that is one of many factors that is saying, well, you know, the dollars per square foot that would be the market rate for renting for leasing a commercial property over here are going to go up, and that's one of many factors that's driving it up. I understand from just listening to a lot of the folks that are you know, that have stores, and you know, some of them are struggling and some of them are not succeeding, and I know that there's a lot of concern and there's a lot of pressure, and I've heard from their own words in council meeting, there's a lot of fear, and I respect that. You know, I know that there's a lot of there's a fear that you're losing something. You know, that's certainly not my judgment to make. That's a very honest feeling, and you want to give light to that. You want to say, well, what does that mean? How do we address it? What can we do about that? That may require the use of something like a specific plan to spell out what goes here and there. And then I'll just sort of take the flip side. Certainly in my, where I come from with respect to realtors in the real estate profession, we do adhere to support for property rights. You know, we are allowed to, you know, if you own a piece of property, you are allowed to do as you will on that property within certain guidelines, obviously. And so what are those guidelines? It's a very thin line that we can walk on, where we want to be mindful of property rights. The owners of those properties may not be some huge corporation somewhere. It may be just a mom and pop operation that may be their retirement. You know, and so will they lose their retirement if there's so much restrictions, as Jim said, in Seal Beach, where they're not able to have enough return to, you know, it's their own personal business plan.
This is what we call a can of worms.
Yes, it is.
You know, no,
this
seriously.
This is actually more like a stick of dynamite than a can of worms.
you're right. You're absolutely right, James. It's just, so throwing it out here. Okay, so you go and you make this plan, and let's just say, for instance, it's a combination of you don't let the use of the property change, okay? So if it's a restaurant, it has to be a restaurant.
That's already in place.
Okay. And then
temporarily.
This is all hypothetical. I'm just talking here. So you don't change the use, and then you take it a step further and you say, okay, no national chains in this area. These are the boundaries, and you can't have a Banana Republic or a Yogurtland or whatever, okay? And you get the community to go along with all that, all right? So, but that still doesn't stop the property owner who is, if he's getting $11 a foot now, he's not going to lower it to $4 so that the dry cleaner can move in, all right? And not only that, as David was saying, there's a lot of fear from businesses. If the business isn't viable, if there are mom and pop stores in the downtown area that can't afford it, maybe that business shouldn't be in business. You know, there are a lot of tentacles to this. It's not just one thing.
Well, the other thing that you brought up was the national versus local stores, whatever it is. There's a couple ways to look at it. One, no business district ever, and David can probably speak to this as well, no business ever has thrived for a long period of time without a mix of national and local tenants. It's almost impossible. You have to have some mix in there. You need something that draws people's attention and brings them. And that's something we have to be careful of. Do we have enough of them? Do we have too many of them? That's a whole other story. But to outright ban them is a scary proposition because that could have long-lasting effects. It takes you 3-4 years to get on the radar of some chains to even get them to come into town. And if you ban them outright, everybody stops thinking about your market, and not just our downtown market, but also our Sepulveda and Rosecrans market. So we have to be really cognizant of decisions we make along those lines.
Yeah.
Wow.
A can of worms, a stick of dynamite, a pickle.
There's a lot of personal sense in too, and I do remember this from comments that were made at the last city council meeting during this discussion, where you know, the argument is that if it's a national chain store, if it's like a, you know, Urban Outfitters as opposed to my own personal apparel shop that I've had, that my mom had, you know, and I know all of my customers, my kids babysat their kids, and we all went to school together. And so there's a big sense of community, whereas if you're, you know, working in a, let's just pick on Urban Outfitters, you know, and you're just working there and you're answering to a regional district manager who's answering to a, you know, an executive district manager from state who, again, is a national chain, is there some kind of a personal engagement for the local community that's lost? If the local Boys and Girls Clubs comes in and says, hey, you know, could you help us contribute to our, you know, fundraiser for our Boys and Girls Clubs that helps needy kids? And then maybe the national chain says, well, gosh, let me ask corporate and get back to you. So that I think is also an element. I don't know what the answer to that is, but, you know, and I know that some of the smarter corporations out there are realizing that, hey, you know, we can't just waltz into a community and, you know, take our money and waltz back out again. That's what Walmart discovered in Inglewood a number of years ago. And I think others have taken notice. Now, I'm not for a minute suggesting that anything like a Walmart will come anywhere near Manhattan Beach Boulevard. It's just not a fit for many, many, many reasons. You know, but there are other kinds of chains there. Look at Lemonade. Lemonade's not a national chain, but it is a chain. You know, so how do you define what's a chain? Who should stay and who should not stay? You know, this again is, there's so many different facets you can look at on this.
Well, yeah, and then
the city attorney brought up a good point on that as well. looking at, our chain mix downtown, the Sims Group started here, local. Everybody loved Mike and his family, but he is a chain now. He has multiple locations in multiple cities. How would that affect him remaining here as well?
Yeah, and then there's the whole point of that the dollars that you spend in your community, if it's a mom-and-pop store, more of a stay in your community as opposed to a national chain, right?
Yeah, there's definitely an impact on that.
Absolutely. Well, we are enjoying this discussion tremendously. I think, Jackie, we're going to transition.
Yes.
And what are we doing now?
The Manhattan Beach 360 events calendar is brought to you by the Strand House. The Strand House offers the quintessential beach dining experience where the incredible food is as spectacular as the view. The iconic location overlooking the Manhattan Beach Pier provides an exceptional setting for any occasion. Recently named one of Zagat's 30 Under 30, LA's hottest up-and-coming chefs, Chef Greg Hosinski crafts traditional dishes in new and exciting adaptations. The Strand House presents any number of ways to elevate your dining experience. Savor a handcrafted cocktail at the upstairs bar overlooking the Pacific. Join friends around the fire pit and choose from over 40 wines by the glass. Reserve the wine cellar for an intimate gathering or important business dinner. Enjoy lunch, brunch, or dinner in the light-filled dining room. Dine al fresco on one of the patios or attend their unique culinary master series. In keeping with the treasured beach city's tradition, the Strand House also offers dancing Thursday through Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons. That's right, Sundays at the beach are back. For additional information and to make reservations, call 310-545-7470 or visit the website at www.thestrandhousemb.com.
All right. And James, we talked a little bit about some of the upcoming dates for people interested in participating in the planning process. Are there some other things coming up for the chamber?
Sure. I'll keep it brief because I'd really like to keep this conversation going. So October 2nd, next week, we have our Best of Manhattan Awards at Manhattan Beach Marriott. Still a few tickets left, so if you're interested, go online and pick up a couple tickets. Additionally, sometime the second week of October, we're going to make an announcement next week, but for the second week in October, we're going to have a launch party. Everybody's invited, free. We're going to have some booze and food. It will be at Paul Martin on Rosecrans. But we are going to launch our new quarterly business journal there to the public. Some have seen it at their homes, and others will see it at their businesses in the next couple of days. But we want to have a huge announcement and let everybody know that this is a product moving forward they can see in their community. And then we are also working currently with David and the Real Estate Association and the Downtown Business and Professionals Association on an informative series to get town hall meetings and discussions going about new zoning and properly planning for downtown.
Mm-hmm.
More information to follow on that.
All right. Great. So pursuant to keeping the conversation going, David, we are at a point now where many of the pieces are in place. The chessboard is set. And I know that in some way this does affect the profession of a realtor in Manhattan Beach, because real estate is obviously a huge business, and these kinds of things will affect. Is this specifically only affecting commercial, or does it affect residential, in your opinion, David?
I would think it would also affect residential as well. I mean, if only, as Jim said at the top of the show, where people want to move here to live here because of the amenities and services that are available. Just love to live in one of these sort of cute houses, 5 blocks from the beach, and walk over to the Kettle on Sunday for breakfast. And then, I think they all kind of bleed back and forth. I think it's very hard to isolate, especially at a local level, one thing from another. That said, there will be, I think, a larger impact for the specific issue on commercial, because it's focusing on just the commercial real estate only in this corridor here.
Right. I have to tell you, this discussion reminds me very much of the fact that my wife loves Disneyland. If she could live near Main Street, she would jump at that chance, because we would be able to walk down Main Street every day, and it would always be the same, David. Is that extreme? Is that something that you think some people want Manhattan Beach to be like? They just want it to stay the same.
It's not extreme. The desire is real. But then let's take that a little bit further. What does stay the same mean? Stay the same means things, different things for different people. Maybe for one person that means, you know what, I remember, you know, when I was 7 years old, I had sort of a part-time job at Fred's local hardware store, and I want that store to be there for my grandkids. And maybe that's it, or maybe the stay the same means you want to have somewhere to walk. Maybe the stay the same means you want to have real estate prices low enough so your kids can buy a house here too. So it means a lot of different things to different people, which is why it's very, very tough. I think when you get into the business world, those are all quality of life type issues. Okay. When you get into the business world, you can't quantify quality of life because it means different things to different people. So that's what makes it difficult. I'll go one step further, and I agree with your wife's point with respect to Disneyland. That's what part of why Disneyland is so attractive. You know, I mean, I've been going to Disneyland since I was 5 years old. I grew up in Southern California, and, you know, you have this feeling of excitement walking down Main Street.
Right.
The whole Main Street USA, just for that reason, because there's people all around you. Everyone's kind of doing the same thing, and so you are a participant in a wider community. It doesn't even matter if there are people you don't know. It's just, you know, you have a shared experience.
Right.
Even though Main Street USA is kind of a Potemkin village, right? I mean, it's just sort of a facade, but the feeling is there.
Right.
If you walk up and down Manhattan Beach Boulevard, I mean, it's not fake, it's real. I mean, that's real life and real people doing real stuff in there, and it creates that same feeling. So there are lots of sort of new models in urban planning that have been emerging, and smart growth is one of them, probably the largest of them, which says, you know, it's okay for us to want to recreate that feeling, that sense of that desire to locate in a certain area based on what, you know, the physical surroundings look like.
It's a feeling we often got and our children growing up in Hermosa, that feeling that we knew the people, we recognized everyone, the shops, we knew the shop owners.
Right.
And it has changed.
And that can happen in any context. I mean, it can happen in Manhattan and New York. It can happen in downtown L.A. I mean, you don't need 30-story skyscrapers to have a walkable community. You can scale it to any level you want. Go to Europe and go to some tiny little French or Italian or Spanish village with 300 people living there. Mm. And guess what? It's walkable. Mm. It's a walkable community because it's very compact and it's centralized. It's just different. I think that what's happening here in the United States, as you've seen in the East Coast, and I think it changed maybe after the Second World War when cars became more prominent, when different planning theories came into being, when the idea is that, well, you should be able to drive anywhere you want, and you had some of these wide collector arterial streets like Hawthorne Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hawthorne Boulevard, it's difficult to walk in certain areas because there's just so much traffic. The human scale doesn't exist there.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we manage that?
Right.
You know, I just one more note I'd like to make. I live in Riviera Village, and I moved here almost 30 years ago. And of the stores in the village that were here when I first moved here, I think there are maybe four that are still here. But over the course of those 30 years, it's just as much of a village now. I think even more so than it was. Well, no, I'm not going to say one is better than the other. But it's continually evolved, and new businesses have continually moved in. But they are all the mom-and-pop stores. You know, Don from Catalina Kitchen, Joe,
yes.
He rented a storefront there, and he put in a little cooking shop. And he seamlessly became part of the community. You know, I stopped in there. I stopped in there a couple of weeks ago. I told him I needed new steak knives, and he showed me the different options, and we talked about it, and I thought about it some more, and then I called him up, and I said, okay, I want to order these. And, you know, last week I went down and I picked them up. What you just said, it's about going through your downtown and knowing people and having them be a part of the community.
Right. You know, I met a real estate broker, a gentleman a number of years ago, a member of our association who works near San Pedro, and he sold real estate in New York City several decades ago. And he said, so back in the 50s and the 40s, if you were a real estate agent in New York City, you were assigned a territory, and that territory was 4 square blocks.
Hmm.
That's it. And in that 4 square blocks, you were expected to know everything, everyone, every person's grandma, every kid, every building owner, every maintenance issue, every police officer, everything that you knew within those 4 square blocks. And so that's a very human scale.
Hmm.
I think in many ways maybe we got away from that human scale, and we're wrestling with it. There's a feeling that we want to get the human scale back. And human scale, again, means different things to different people. But I think there's a desire to have it back, which is what makes things like Manhattan Beach Boulevard here in our world so desirable. It makes people want to be there.
Right. I like that word. I think it may mean different things to different people, but at some point it's easy to tell what is and what isn't comfortable for a family to walk down, a street for a family to walk down. Everyone can agree, well, that street is comfortable to walk down for a family, and that street is not. And human scale, I love that.
Right.
James, we're getting near the end of the show. What takeaways do we want people to take from this show?
Well, I just encourage everybody, regardless of where you fall on this issue or where you think you fall on this issue right now, take the time to actually understand what's going on. Reach out to David, myself, Kelly with downtown, the city, anybody. Go in and talk to your local shop owner. Go in and talk to your local realtor. You know, spend time getting to know what the issue is and, you know, actually participate in this process, because over the next year, a lot of very important decisions are going to be made. And the only way you can feel that you got what you wanted to be heard is to actually be there and be part of it.
Right.
So I just encourage everybody to reach out, get as much information as possible, and then actually let their voice be heard, because we only have, 36,000 residents.
Right.
We can hear everybody's voice on this issue. We're in a Manhattan, you know, New York. We're talking millions of people. There's no way you can hear every issue. But we can actually spend, over the next year, people write letters, people stop at council, people just talk to other people. We can actually get most viewpoints out on the table and try and understand where everybody's coming from. Will we ever have a movie theater back downtown? No. Will we have a gas station back downtown? Probably not. Could we have a hardware store? Maybe. Those are the kinds of things that people can say, you know, hey, I'd love to have a movie theater downtown. All right, it's not going to happen with our current zoning and planning.
Yeah.
But we can make sure that we continue to attract the types of businesses, protect some certain types of businesses, and understand what the mix really is. Do people want to walk up to a storefront and be able to see what the homes are next to? Maybe. So we need to make sure we protect that as well.
Right.
James, I'll give you a little advice. If anybody wants to see something that's failed miserably, send them up to the promenade on the peninsula.
That's
that just, what's happened there is so sad. It now consists of services, doctor's offices, tutoring services, and all of the individual stores are gone, and it's just several big national chains with nobody in them.
Right.
There's nobody in that mall except to go to the movie. It is, what's happened there is sad.
Right. If you want to get involved, it's ManhattanBeachChamber.com, ManhattanBeachChamber.com, or you can certainly call James at 310-545-5313, 310-545-5313. And David, what is your contact information?
I can be reached by email at david@southbayaor.com. Mm-hmm. And my phone, 310-326-3010.
Wonderful. Great discussion, David. Thank you so much, James O'Callaghan.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week on Tuesday. Bye-bye.